Hello and welcome to The Leap of Faith. Sunday is, for Hindus, the festival of Makar Sankranti. And we'll hear how some of the 14,000 Hindus living in Ireland will be celebrating this weekend, with events from kite flying to feasting on sugar-rich delicacies. Also this evening, as the new year gets underway, we'll look forward to events on the faith calendar. And certainly one of the most talked about here in Ireland is the strong possibility of a papal visit, nearly 40 years since the last one. This summer, it's hoped that Pope Francis will attend the World Meeting of Families in Ireland. And you're listening at the moment to the official hymn of the event, A Joy for All the Earth, composed by Ephraim Feely. Already several thousand people have signed up to attend this five-day event, scheduled for the end of August. One of the chief organisers is Father Tim Bartlett, Secretary General of the World Meeting of Families. And Tim, you're welcome to The Leap of Faith. What is the World Meeting of Families and why Ireland?
Well, the World Meeting of Families is an international, global event that takes place every 3 years in the Catholic Church. It was established by St. John Paul II in 1994. The last one was in Philadelphia. And at the end of the last one in Philadelphia, to the surprise of many, I have to say, Dublin, Ireland was announced for the next venue. And it's unbelievable that we're already so close to that now. But Pope Francis himself personally chose Ireland and Dublin for this event. Many people are asking me, why did he do that? Well, there's a number of reasons we can say. One, people may not know this, but as Father Bergoglio, he spent some time in Dublin. I think it was in 1980 or thereabouts.
This is learning English.
Yeah? Learning English. Yeah. And there's a famous, we now have a copy of it, we actually now have the record, where the bursar in Milltown Park, where he stayed, has written into the accounts, I think it's 20 punt or something, 20 euro, for Father Bergoglio for tapes and books to learn English. So we're going to show him that.
We'll have to keep an ear out for that soft tea when it comes.
Exactly, exactly. A good talking point. So look, he knows Dublin, he knows the Irish. And what he really has, he knows about the Irish is even more important. He knows that we're welcoming, we're hospitable, so he can entrust a global event where families from across the world are coming to us for this event. He knows that we will open our doors, open our arms and welcome people and make them feel at home here. So he trusts us to have this event. He is also very, very aware of the Irish missionary tradition. Anybody who knows anything about Pope Francis, his mantra since the day in Ari became Pope, and indeed before, is, look, the church can't be about staying in the sacristy. It has to go out. It has to go to the peripheries of society and the world. And he would tell you, the Irish did that throughout their history. That's why there's St. Patrick's churches in Tokyo, in Seoul, in New York, in Buenos Aires, where the Pope is from, you know, because we went out across the world and he wants to come and acknowledge that. He also knows, despite all the turmoil and discussion about nature, family and so on in our society, as an Irish people, we have always been and continue to be a very family-friendly culture. We value the bond of family and relationship and closeness and clan. And so he knows that having an event that is about family and is about welcoming families from across the world, what better place than Ireland to have it?
And might there even be a remedial effect of this particular event happening in Ireland as well? Putting things right.
Well, I suppose we are just taking it at face value and letting it happen. And Philadelphia, who hosted it the last time, would tell you that there were all sorts of unexpected positives that flowed from it, even for the city itself, that it really put them on the map. And it was no accident that they were then chosen to host, for example, the Democratic Convention the following year and several other major events since. So it really put Philadelphia on the map. It'll put Ireland on the map. I think it'll give lots of people, even people who are not that close to the church, something of an uplift. Ireland will be on the world stage, make no mistake about it, because Pope Francis is one of the most popular and best known leaders in the whole world today.
And that's a little bit of the dilemma for you as the organiser really here, isn't it? Because you've got this event, which in its own right is happening over this particular period of time, but all of the focus is happening on one person turning up on that particular event.
And I can tell you that that one person, Pope Francis, has told us and would tell anybody who's listening, this event is about the families who are coming, the families from across the world and the families in Ireland who will come. And it's about the World Meeting of Families, not about him coming. Now, naturally, that's our focus. We're very honoured, very proud. And we're hopeful, very hopeful that the Pope will, of course, come. But he would say, look, I'm coming to the World Meeting of Families, if I'm coming. This is not a papal visit to Ireland in that sense.
It's quite different from 1979.
Very different. Yeah. Not just because our society is different, not just because, first of all, this is a Pope who's a considerable degree older, and that also changes the amount of things a man at that age can do within a short space of time. But it's fundamentally different because it's about an international global event that he has chosen Ireland to host, and that's the priority. He is passionate about the family. He tells us, for example, he uses this lovely phrase, the future of the world itself passes by way of the family. And then he quickly goes on to say, but there is no such thing as the perfect family. There's no family has fallen from heaven, he says, perfectly formed. The family is sometimes a place where plates can fly. But it's also very often the first hospital in our lives, the first place we turn to for support, strength, nourishment, and literally healing, you know, in all sorts of ways. So he is passionate about the importance of family to the world, to the church, to our lives as individuals. And that's what he is focusing on in terms of this event and Ireland.
The interesting thing about that is that Northern Ireland has also appeared on the agenda.
Yes, because of the fact that in 1979, famously, St. John Paul II wasn't able to fulfil that visit. I felt that very much as a 14-year-old from the north, living in the north at the time. I remember my devastation that the Pope wasn't able to come north. Naturally, people are speculating that, you know, the Pope coming to Ireland, a natural thing to do for him would be to go north. The simple truth of the matter is, at this stage, we can't say whether he will or will not. And if he was to go to the north, it will not be some extra add-on event. It will be intimately connected to the World Meeting of Families and to issues that are real for families. But it's too early to say whether he will go anywhere else other than Dublin and to the event itself.
Now, with somebody possibly with an inside view to this, is it just that the coyness that about whether he's coming, where he's going, is that on purpose? Is that accidental? Or is it just the way the Vatican works?
It's just the way the Vatican works. What we can say very positively at this stage is the Pope chose us. The Pope is telling everybody that he wants to come to Ireland. So we're very optimistic. And I would expect that a formal announcement would issue sometime maybe in February. And we're looking forward to that. But that's all it is. Behind the scenes, it's fair to say that the Pope himself, you know, has said to people he meets in Rome from Ireland, oh, listen, I'm looking forward to going to Ireland. So we're hopeful, very hopeful.
And might people be testing the water, for example, suggesting that maybe Queen Elizabeth of England might actually turn up at this event?
Well, people are speculating about all sorts of very noble, attractive ideas. But the truth is, at this stage, genuinely, those kind of things have not been decided. I come back to this point, but the Pope himself is saying to us, this is about the World Meeting of Families. It's not an Irish World Meeting of Families, it's the World Meeting of Families in Ireland.
Okay, let's talk about that event then in particular, because I mentioned at the beginning the idea that you already had a number of volunteers. These are people who are making themselves available to act, I presume, as stewards and helpers at the event. Yes. You've also other ways that people become involved. Rex, you're looking for accommodation.
One of our biggest problems is actually accommodation at that time of the year. In August of this coming year, the height of the tourist season, and with the thousands of families and individuals whom we hope will come, getting enough accommodation. And to be frank, a lot of the families who will pay to travel will not necessarily be able to afford having a family in the Greater Dublin area for a full week. So we're about to launch a special appeal to families in the Greater Dublin area to host a family, or host a family campaign. And people can find out details about that on our website, and we'd make a special appeal to anybody who has a spare room and would be willing to host an individual or a family to let us know, and we'll come out and talk to them about what's involved and also about the necessary regulations and protections that keep us all right about these things, safeguarding and so on, which is really, really important throughout this event. But you know, we are Irish, we are welcoming and hospitable people, I'm very hopeful that we'll get a great response from the people of the Greater Dublin area in welcoming families from across the world.
So then people will find themselves at various different venues around the city. And what will they be doing? What's in store for people over those days?
Well, there'll be an opening ceremony on the evening of Tuesday, the 21st of August. That'll actually take place in each diocese across Ireland, at a venue in each diocese. Then that leads into a 3-day pastoral congress, which we can confirm will be in the RDS in Dublin. And this will be three fun days for families and individuals, comprising a mixture of things like talks on issues to do with family. For example, we're going to look very closely at the impact of technology on the family, a huge issue today. We'll be looking at things like homelessness and its impact on families, the experience of refugees, those kind of things. But there will also be lots of fun activities. We might even have, say, some cooking classes for families and, you know, how to make a family efficient meal, a cost-effective meal, those kind of things. We're looking at, you know, kind of 3-day experiences that kids can tap into. And
what I'm curious about is that if somebody signs up for one of the events, do they have to be well-versed in the theology? Do they have to be very good at their faith in order to be a good contributor to the event?
Michael, I'm glad you asked me that. I can't stress enough, this event is for everyday families. Absolutely not. You do not need to be particularly close to the church. All you have to be is open and interested and value family. And after the 3-day Congress, one of the hallmark events that I'm really looking forward to is the Saturday night event, which we expect will be in Croke Park. It's not absolutely confirmed, but we expect it will be. And it's called the Festival of Families. Now, who can put on a festival better than the Irish? And this will be song, singing, reflection, testimony of families from across the world, you know, the joys and challenges of being a family in the world today. And Pope Francis, if he comes, he will be amidst, among us for that event. And it's one of the highlights of it. Now, tickets for that will be limited because of the size of the stadium. But the next day we'll have the final mass. And if the Pope is with us, you know, we'd be hopeful that that would be in Phoenix Park. Not yet confirmed, but that's our hope at this stage, if the Pope comes, certainly. And we're doing everything in our power to make that as accessible to everybody who wants to come as we can.
And again, I hate going back, but comparison to maybe in 1979, you don't expect to fill the Phoenix Park with everybody who's just turning up for one particular event. Most people will have committed to going to some of the other events beforehand.
Well, people will understand that in today's world, as opposed to 1979, we have health and safety regulations, we have security considerations. So we think at this stage that we'll have to ticket all of the events, and people will have to therefore get a ticket now. For anything that the Pope is attending, and including and especially the final mass, there will be no charge. We do not charge people anything to go and see the Pope. The 3-day Congress, because it's talks, and we're inviting adults, only the adults, to, if they can, to make a contribution. And if people can't and adults can't, we will work that out with them and they want to come.
And there were some rumblings about how are we going to pay for this in a different Ireland, and who's going to pay for it?
I can tell you now, Pope Francis and the Archbishop of Dublin would not tolerate any extravagance in relation to any event like this. It's not in their nature. They are highly aware of the sensitivities around money and the responsibility and the other things we could do with any money in terms of the homeless issue and all of that. So, but there are inevitable costs that you just can't avoid in hosting any big event, any big international event. So we're doing everything to keep the cost to a minimum, but also to facilitate what would be a genuine celebration, you know. We're fundraising in a whole series of ways, both locally and internationally. You know, we've still a long way to go to cover our costs, but this event would be happening anyway, even if the Pope didn't come. But to host a large event, there are certain fixed costs that you have to cover.
And as you say, we're in a different time now. It's all technology. You go online, you book your tickets. How many people have booked so far that they're aware?
Well, we're very pleased that in terms of the registration for the 3-day Congress, which guarantees you a ticket for the Festival of Families and the Final Mass, we're already over 4,000 and several thousand more who have indicated that they want to bring groups and things like that. So we're very pleased with that. That represents something like 50 countries across the world. And then, of course, our own Irish people, some of that is Irish people already, but we should appeal to them to please go online and register as soon as possible. It's not possible just now to book a ticket for the final Mass or separately for the Festival of Families, but that will emerge in time on our website. But if you can go on and you're interested in coming to the 3-day RDS event and get a ticket then for the final Mass and for the festival, by doing that, please do so soon, because the places are booking up very, very quickly.
I'm thinking back maybe, and we've chatted before on the programme about yourself and how you became a priest, etc. But I wonder, did you ever realise you were signing up to be an event manager?
I have to tell you, this has been one incredible journey. A fascinating, sometimes a very frightening journey in terms of the scale of all that's involved. But I never thought I would have to know about Portaloos and how many Portaloos you can get on a truck. I never thought I'd have to know about how you pump water into a Portaloo, all these kind of things. But I tell you this, I am incredibly blessed, and I really mean this, by the tremendous team, most of whom, thanks be to God, are women who are keeping me right. And our main managers throughout this project are women with tremendous experience in organising event, dealing with the media, doing all of those things. So in a sense, I'm just kind of overseeing it, and lots of other people are doing tremendous work.
I want to bring you forward then to the end of August. It's all done and dusted. What will be your definition of it being a success?
I suppose that people would feel simply lifted in their hearts a little bit, and that the world is a more hopeful place, and that family is an important thing in our lives, whatever the imperfections and the challenges of any given family. But you know what? Family is still important in our lives. But if it can lift our mood a little bit and give us a bit of hope for moving forward in the world generally, that to me will be a success.
Father Tim Bartlett, thank you for joining us on The Leap of Faith, and maybe we look forward to an update closer to the event from you as well.
The pleasure is mine. Thank you very much.
नंदन स्वामी जय कश्यप नंदन.
While in this part of the world, we're in the midst of short wintry days and freezing cold nights, in India and Nepal, thoughts are beginning to turn to warmer climes. This Sunday, the 14th of January, one of the most significant Hindu festivals, Makar Sankranti, will be taking place. This particular date is based on the lunar calendar, and the festival is being held in honour of the sun god Surya, celebrating the transition of the sun from Sagittarius to Capricorn during the winter solstice. In Ireland, there's a growing Hindu community, and festivals such as this are hugely popular as a way of feeling closer to home and staying in touch with Hindu traditions. Bindu Niyar lives in Lucan in County Dublin with her husband Santosh and their children, and she's with me in the studio this evening. Bindu, here in Ireland, according to the latest census figures, Hinduism is the second fastest growing religion after Christianity, and numbers are up by a third, bringing the Hindu population in this country to over 14,000.
Yes, and I suppose that's the overall the number of Indians. The number of Indians would have gone up in Ireland. So proportionately, the number of Hindus in Ireland would have gone up as well.
You came to Ireland when?
I came to Ireland in 2003. And I got married and I came to Ireland. So love brought me to Ireland.
And as a Hindu, how does that represent itself for you as a religion or a faith or a way of living?
Hindu is more than a religion. It's a culture and it's a way of life. So it does not have any rules to follow. But what it adheres to is certain concepts such as truth, dharma or karma. And karma is something that we would have known that people talk about. Mm. So there is nothing specific that you would follow, that you have to go to the temple so many times, or do you have to attend a mass so many times. There's nothing like that in Hinduism.
But there is the idea of gods, not even just one, but many.
A number of gods and goddesses. And I suppose because we have a number of gods and goddesses, we have a number of festivals, because with the all of these festivals have some kind of spiritual significance.
Now, I heard a figure of 330 million gods. That's a lot, but you actually probably could narrow it down to maybe four key ones, with others then in a hierarchy under them.
Yes, because a God could come in a number of different forms. So that's why when you call 330 million, it's probably the number of different gods that we have. But there is one God might take a number of different forms as well.
As a Hindu, how does the practice of the faith or the belief system or the life system, how does that moderate a person's approach to everyday life? For example, the festivals.
Each of these festivals have a different significance. For example, the Makar Sankranti on the 14th of January, that signifies in some parts of the country, it's about bonding. It's about forgetting the past and kind of moving on and being friends. And also Diwali, for example, that's a festival of lights. And one of the significance of Diwali is victory of good over evil, knowledge over ignorance. So I suppose... because each of these festivals have some kind of significance that is related to being happy and being friends with people, I suppose that's why you see that people kind of are happy in the way that they are and they're in their daily lives.
And in your own particular life, how does this affect you? For example, do you have a shrine to a god or goddess in your own home?
Yes, I have a little temple that I have, and I always make sure that whenever I light the lamp, I have the kids with me just to make sure that they are connected to the roots as well. And I have a number of different gods as well. It's funny that you asked the question as well. Just the other day, my 3-year-old, she came to me and she kind of said, can you name all the goddess and the gods that are here? I just want to pray to each one of them. So yes, we do have a number of gods in the house as well. And being born and brought up in Mumbai, I was exposed to so many different cultures. So I suppose that's not one god that we pray. We say a prayer to a number of different ones.
Do your prayers get answered?
Yes, they do. And that's why I'm here and right in front of you.
Bindu, we're talking because this particular weekend, there's a festival to be celebrated. What's happening and where is it happening?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Michael. There is a festival which is called Makar Sankranti, and it is celebrated in Clonsilat. And the objective of this festival is to bring together all of the different Indian communities. And it is organized by one specific Indian community here, which is the Telugu Association, which they are towards the southern part of India. And it's mainly for kids, and it's to give them that kind of exposure of what happens in Makar Sankranti in India. If you were in India, this is what was given. So it's an effort to give them a glimpse of what would you experience in India if you were celebrating Makar Sankranti.
In Ireland, of course, we might say go fly a kite, and that might be a way to tell you to go and do something else, but it's very much part of this particular festival.
Yes, absolutely. And Makar Sankranti, it's celebrated in a number of different parts across India, north to south, east to west. But in the west part of India, it has a lot more prominence. And the prominence is by, there's two things that's done during this Makar Sankranti festival. This one is that they distribute sweet Tilgul laddus. And the ones that I have got for you here in the studio today. Mm-hmm. So, so by distributing these laddus, you're spreading happiness and peace. And when you're distributing laddus as well, there is an expression that you say in India, which is Tilgul gya god god bula, which means to forget the past ill feelings and let's speak sweetly and remain friends forever. And that in itself carries a very good message for the community. So, so we all kind of exchange Tilgul laddus. We all eat happily. Also, you asked about the kite flying. So that's a very big tradition in Gujarat and Maharashtra, which is the western part of India. And as kids, I remember we used to race up to the roof of our apartments where there will be family and friends waiting for us. And save your own kite and bring other person's kite down. That's the name of the game. And that's why kites have been bought in large numbers in India. So the way it works is you have a person who's flying the kite and there's another person who's holding the wheel of threads for you. It's very important that there's a coordination between the two of you. And the objective is to have your kite fly as high as possible so that nobody is able to get to your kite.
Or cut it down, which is what they really want to do.
Cut it down, yeah. Exactly, because it is very competitive. And of course, after the kite flying, there's a lot of sweets that we have as well. Indian festivals are always celebrated with a lot of sweets, as it is in Ireland as well. So, but there are different types of sweets that you get in India. I have jalebi here, which is really for the hardcore sugar lovers because it is very sweet, but it is very tasty. I've also another one that I have here, which is called Besan Ka Laddu. It's made out of gram flour. So I have a number of, and also I have a kaju katli, which is made out of, it's made out of cashew nuts. So I have a very delicious, nutritious, high in calories box for you here.
Thank you very much indeed. Now, what is also really interesting when you look at people who follow the Hindu faith is their approach to food, to vegetarianism, or necessarily even just even the role, for example, of the cow and the beef. It's a sacred animal.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that all Hindus are vegetarians. Yes, there's a portion of Hindus that follow the vegetarians, and that comes really from the background that they are from. But yes, cow is a sacred animal, and we wouldn't eat beef or anything like that. But there are other varieties of meats that are available that would be consumed by some of the Hindus.
Bindu, what is the significance of the Ganges River?
The river Ganga, as it is called in India, has a great spiritual and symbolic significance in Hinduism. It's undoubtedly the most sacred river for the Hindus, and millions of Hindus take a dip in its water in the belief that it would wash away their sins. And also during Makar Sankranti in Uttar Pradesh, in the northern part of India, this is one of the ritual that they do, that they dip themselves in the river Ganges or Ganga, with the belief that that would wash away the sins. So this is one of the significance of celebrating Makar Sankranti in the northern part of India, Uttar Pradesh.
Bindu Niyar, thank you. And there is one event you might like to know about. It's taking place tomorrow from 2:30 until 7:00 at St. Peregrine's GAA Club in Clonsilla in Dublin, celebrating the Indian Harvest Festival. Lots of things happening, including kite flying. For more information, go to the Ireland Telugu Association website, itaireland.org. Well, before we go this evening, a quick reminder that Saturday, January 27th is Holocaust Memorial Day. And we'll be talking with Yankee Fackler from the Jewish Historical Society of Ireland in a future programme. Yankee is presenting an afternoon talk this Sunday, January 14th, at the Irish Jewish Museum in Portobello in Dublin on three famous Holocaust libel trials. And there's more information on the website jewishmuseum.ie. From all of us here tonight, good night.